This is Iconic.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things Gumshoe. We're getting into the second half of our review of Double Tap.
But that brings us into the director's companion half.
Yes, and so that's the first 90 pages of 132 is the
players. Agents.
Yeah, the agents, the players. Not the director can't look at that and get ideas on stuff, but it's really meant for the players, the agents, to get more stuff for their characters. So the director's companion, again, to help the director, because we all lead busy lives and trying to put these adventures together can be daunting at times, and it helps because there's certain characters you want to create, but it helps if you have a whole list of NPCs ready to go. And it starts out with cameos, which are those instant NPCs from the arms dealer, the auto mechanic, the bookie, different people that your agents are going to interact with. And it has kind of some basic stats for them, and again, as an asset, as a clue in play, how you would use them. And again, these are just suggestions. You can use them as you want, I guess. But it's a quick, here it is. You get a brief set, your background, and they're ready to go. You don't have to come up with it. I always love when these kind of sets of rules are in for game masters to go, oh, here's a set of NPCs that you can just pull up, and they're not long-term. They might turn into long-term. That's where you give them a name. And, it might be just a one-off, but it might turn into a recurring one, but you've got their basic stats and you can flesh it out more if you need to.
I really like the gym rat. Still in great shape. Willem is gaunt and strong. It was just a misunderstanding that got him fired from his bodyguarding gig, and another will come along. But that's a great, where are you going to find ex-bodyguards for these people that you're tracking? Oh, you're going to find one at the gym. Oh, we got you. Here's the gym rat. There's a lot of clever cameos here for, oh, I need somebody in this place. Oh, sweet, here's somebody. Oh, you guys are going to hang out with them longer? Okay, I'll make up an actual character sheet for them.
But again, and say, because it could be maybe your group doesn't have a hacker. So, here's an NPC that you can maybe use as an asset. Can build and check wiretap as a clue. Was harassed by a conspiracy enforcer in play. Pick a direction, look only there, keenly focus on what's around you. So you can use these people as an asset or in play as an NPC doing stuff. And there's a whole slew of them. Retired cop, second story man, public defender, retired secretary, street thug, reporter, vampire enthralled goth.
Your
faker doing stuff, but maybe more connected than you think. But there's a lot. Not that way.
And then, after you pick up the NPCs, you have to put them somewhere. And so the next section is the establishing shots. Where are you starting your scene? It might not end here. It will probably end in a dark enclosed room with a vampire attempting to chow on their neck. But it might start at the 24-hour CD diner. And if you need that place, it's in here.
Yep, there's the quick establishment that will give you kind of a stock description of what it is, extras that would be there or cameos, clues, rules effects that might give you something like the diner rules effect. There's something about this old diner that feels like home. All agents with lost ability gain two back as if an ally had spent 1 point of shrink, because it's so comforting to sit here in this old diner. And you're like, I feel better for this. There's always in a fight and in a chase. So in a fight, pots of hot coffee, deep fret fire, buckets of bleach, things that, again, it's not always about guns. Or in a chase, slide down the counter, leap through the plate glass window. Many convenient vehicles for carjacking. They would be cramped, but there's just a lot of things that, we need to get out of here. Let me jump through the window, hijack this car. Boom, and get out of here.
I think this paired then with the core book that establishes the city, this gives you your establishing shot. And then with the resource guide, you get your, where did you end up type place. So many useful resources here for any director that is just needs it on the fly or just needs inspiration.
Oh, yeah. You know, class skyscraper, gondola, high-speed train. Again, you know, hey, you know what? We're going from Paris to Budapest. Let's hop on this train because trains are all over Europe, and that's kind of where this is mostly set. Hop on a high-speed train. Boom, there it is, your train station. Mm-hmm. Who's going to be there? The clues, what happens? And then you can do other things, especially if your character's not sure and they go somewhere. They've got examples of a place that you can pull up, just like in the resource guide. And a pinch, you've got something for you for it there. And it's a good, if you're planning something, you know, and they have like a meth lab. Okay, say you're going to go there on purpose. Here's a good basis for what you can then build and expand on. Not just, you know, pull it out of your pocket and ready to go. Megalomaniac secret lair. I don't know if that would be a quick one, but it's a good idea of what would be there. How would it happen?
Probably sharks.
It's got to be sharks. You know, he's got to have that saltwater pool and, you know, the shark-filled moats and all that. Wasn't there a Bond movie where he took his little mini sub swimmer thing and they cut to the grate? There were sharks that they had to bypass the sharks to get into the lair.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
Probably. Hit in the comments if you can remember what movie that is.
Yeah.
It was like an opening scene.
Good.
So we've got NPCs, we've got shots, which are locations to go into. It's just natural that you roll right into monsters to throw at them in these weird places.
Oh, yeah. And so, yeah, like I said in a previous episode, the resource guide had a lot of less vampire-y monsters. We are back to the vampire-y monsters. They give us a few more powers, such as blood working and curse. You know, vampires manipulate blood itself, and then they can create homunculus. A little human, a homunculus. So, yeah, that's just talking about, okay, you lose blood in this fight, and the next thing you know, the vampire has taken your blood and turned it into a small little human-looking creature and is stabbing you with your own blood. Like, that's not traumatizing. Yeah. Such as a red cap, one of JM's favorites to use when it comes to 13th Age. I read that and I was like, sweet. Glad we got those again.
Yeah. A variant of them.
JM thought the Ikimu were fascinating. I don't know why. It's just ancient Mesopotamian cultures. But right, he's kind of a expert on that. Different ghosts or demons who suck the veins of humans and ceaselessly devour blood. Because, you know, why not? Did you have one that you thought was super interesting?
Nosferatu. So I'm into the traditional. That's still that old, silent, black and white Nosferatu. Mm-hmm. It's really scary. It's not, oh, look, I'm charming. No, you're not Bela Lugosi. This guy is horrible. So, yeah, I'm more of the traditional. I like that one. Which one did you like?
I mean, I'd probably throw a homunculus if I was a director. And if I really wanted to traumatize people, I would do I'm going to butcher this name. The Penangalian. Penangalan? Yes.
Yeah. I think that's... I remember that from that old D&D where it was like the floating head that had all the entrails trailing it. I think it was in the Fiend Folio that it was just horrible. Now I know where they got it. You know, that people went looking at old Malaysian myths and went, what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's traumatizing. So, you know, of course, that's the one I think.
You'd be like, ah.
Right. I mean, or, you know, the hacker's alone in the van. The door opens. They look behind. They don't see anybody. They look back and there's just a floating head. Like,
yeah, yeah.
All right. Who needs to sleep? Not me.
Yeah. And some of these, I will say, maybe we should have said at the beginning, and maybe it's just assumed since you're fighting vampires.
Mm-hmm.
These aren't, I hate to say cute vampires. This is adult horror. And that might be something when you're starting this to get into what level of horror. Because like your Penangalon compulsions, kill children and pregnant women.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to think before you use that if you've got a pregnant woman in your group. And you're like, we'll skip that monster. We'll just be a normal vampire that you can put a silver bullet in and be good and call it good.
Yeah.
Some of these are very dark. How they're created or what their compulsion is kind of like, I'm not going to use that.
Yeah.
So I would definitely kind of get into what level you're doing light horror. Okay, we're going after vampires, but most of what we're going against, the bad guys are going to be human follower types and not horrible monsters.
For sure. Make sure your players are aware and if not necessarily comfortable, because you do want that thrill of a horror story. They're not upset by the game.
Yeah, you have to really check to make sure. Because in general, I would say I'm not really like I don't go out of my way to watch horror movies, you know, Halloween and Scream and name any of them. But I'm not opposed to playing in a game that has horror in it. Yeah, you definitely want to get your comfort level. I probably should put that in the very first episode. Hey, this is something that deals with horror. You might want to talk to your players. And you don't have to go super gross about it. It can still be thrilling to go after, you know, the vampire of Europe.
And
because it lives so long, it has a network of people that it controls, that's what you're tearing down, kind of a thing.
Right. And I will say, I mean, and I'm sure if you are a director, you've heard something like this, but I run a game with that has two high schoolers in it. And you know, the less that you say about things is fine, because it goes over their heads, but the other adults in the group, they know what you're talking about. Like, you don't have to be explicit. Everybody understands you're with vampires, or you're like hunting vampires. You're hunting vampires because they're bad. They've done bad things. You don't have to go into the details of it. But that brings us then to the story. Bah, 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 bah.
Yes, because, you know, the conspiracy that we're all involved in and trying to unravel really is just a big story. Mm-hmm. And this part, this is the kind of the end part for the director. There's a couple parts after this, small things, but this is how to get, as your story progresses, how things unravel. Because the idea of this, it's not, things shouldn't happen in a vacuum, you know, old school D&D or any of your video games where you go into a room, you kill the monster, you go to the next room and the monster is just standing there waiting for you. They don't react to what happens. The boss down at the bottom of the game doesn't react that you've been clearing out rooms and killing all his minions type thing. So you should kind of pay attention to, remember you had that conspiracy pyramid and they have a cool little call out on the sus pyramid. They get into Suspire and it's good tongue in cheek stuff, but you have the same kind of a pyramid like you do. Okay. Here's the whole structure of who's at the top and all the different levels down to your minions and how you're going to traverse this pyramid and discover clues and work your way up. You have another pyramid that has, okay, you've run into the street gang that's dealing in drugs, that's funneling money to this. And as you tear apart their little conspiracy and cults, destroy them or pull them apart, things get frayed. And then they get stressed. And then finally they're broken. And what happens to the conspiracy? What reaction? If you're, and they talk about horizontal and vertical as far as you're going through, because this network is huge. It's not just going to be one, you know, one mafia family in one town. It might be organized crime across Europe that they're working with. because, you know, bad guys want to get rich. The vampire is going to make you rich. He might keep his identity hidden so you don't know it's a vampire, but they're working with all bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
So as things get stressed and frayed, what happens? Do they think it's competition if it's horizontal to where this family and this family now in the mafia are going to get each other because either they blame each other for what's going on, or if it's horizontal, if you're taking things apart, is there going to be a coup going up, or is it going to be someone up top is seeing what's below him fraying and coming apart? It's like, you know what? Becca's running this show in Milan and things are going apart. She's burnt. I'm going to burn her and cut, done. So they can't get to me. So right. You kind of keep track because it shouldn't be the vacuum. Things happen and become, and they use the word, you know, terms frayed, stressed, and broken as you're unraveling. You're trying to figure out what's going on. They're kind of pulling apart, infighting, what's happening. And it's just an idea to help you kind of control what's going on. What are the reactions? Are they running? Are they sending out hunters to kill the party that's sent messages out saying, we know who you are? And so now they're the hunted. Mm-hmm. It'll have some of the reactions as you're doing things. You might get a lead and go, hey, here's our next lead. And you go check it out. And guess what? Meth lab is gone. It's destroyed. And when you track it down a little bit farther, you find that everybody that worked there is dead. Mm-hmm. And the policeman is like, oh yeah, gang war, no biggie. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something bigger. Something's happening. So that's just something. Yeah. And they have examples in here for the director to some examples of the diagram. Like I said, it starts with intrigue, strife, the different levels of your pyramid as you're going up. Paranoia, vengeance, slaughter, collapse as you finally get to the top, as things fall apart. And hopefully you get there before, you know, you too are exterminated. So, and again, it's just ideas for that. And then with all of that, the final bits from the director part is how to run a solo game and some eras.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to cover, what are the other eras that you can play in if you want to play a modern Jason Bourne?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, most of what we have here is for modern day with all the amenities for today. But they offer up the Victorian era, which you then have to change a few of your abilities. You got to get rid of data recovery and electronic surveillance, obviously. But then get to input social class and change up some of your other abilities. Then they give you the World War II era. Data recovery is still not available, but you get to add just some of the different builds are changed. Their martini straight up from the original Knights Black Agent book is fixed here and gives you the appropriate build for a World War II spy. And then the third era they give you is a Cold War era. Some of the things that have changed, and this is the 1960s and 70s, when you're just starting to get those computer systems and you're just starting to get things connected via the internet, which is this elusive thing that isn't quite built yet. So you get to change up kind of what era you are in. And if you then wish to, you could age your character and then run different scenarios in different times from Cold War, where you are one of the think tank agents. And then in 2010, good 40 years later, you are, you know, you're coming out from behind the desk for one last mission because you're here to make sure that that man you thought you put down stays down. So yeah, they've got some good ideas for offering up other eras as well as aging your character and what that would look like on your character sheet.
I think they even suggest, like, if you wanted to play it out and take a session, say, all right, let's go back to the Cold War and you'll play some agents doing stuff. And go through that 60s and 70s where rooms were full of a computer that we handle on our phone now, and then jump forward to 2016 and he's the retired guy in the old folks home that you go hit and like, hey, do you remember that operative in 1975 in Laos? That's completely classified and, you know, you couldn't find much information. And then he goes to his room, pulls out a shoebox, and he's got this big disc tape thing that you had to figure out how to use because computers don't use that anymore. But yeah, it's great where you can go back to different eras and the technologies then. And like I said, they get the builds up. You can't do this, but this is what you get to do now. You know radios, you know Morse code, or you know other things. So there's great stuff there. So other areas that you want to play in. So overall, Becca, would you recommend this?
Oh, if I was going to be running or playing in a campaign of Knights Black Agents, yes. I think it's got a lot of really great stuff in there. And cost-wise, again, PDF is about $17. Print and digital is $25.
Yes, that's why I was just looking on mine because I didn't buy the PDF. It's $24.95 when I picked this up.
Mm-hmm. Pelgrim does that thing where if you buy the PDF and later go back and buy the print version, they will take into account what you've already spent on the PDF.
Oh, great. Yeah. It's really good. If you haven't bought it, just go get them both. It's great to have. I like having a book, too. Sometimes it's great to pass at your table because you can't expect everyone. You know, if you got five other players, everybody buys everything. It'd be great if they would support, you know, a great company. But as a director, like, here, look through this, get some ideas. Don't look at the director stuff. Get them some things. I definitely recommend it. It's well worth it. It's 132 pages, but it is jam-packed, full of stuff. There is some black and white art here and there through it, which is okay. I'd rather have more rule stuff and the pictures here and there just kind of help lend a little extra point to emphasize something. And there's great humorous call outs, that they put in there. So that wraps up this week's stream for Knights Black Agents, Double Tap and the resource guide.
Next we're going to be going into the Dracula dossier. And soon we will be running our one shot of Knights Black Agents, which I'm super excited about.
I am too. So. I do enjoy this game. It's a good, it's a different take on stuff. Mm-hmm. I like the rule set too. I could use it for other stuff too. Kind of like it.
Yeah. So
hope you enjoyed the episode. Again, next time we meet, hopefully, Jam is off the injured reserve and can fully participate with his wit and witticisms. Mm-hmm. And until then, to quote JM, stay safe and stay gaming.
And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast.
You've been listening to the Iconic Podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com. Also, check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and more information about the show. Thanks for listening.